Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Jen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, November 16th, and we're here. Despite all the strong winds, Jen, I almost got blown all the way to the beach, but I'm here.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Anytime.
So, you said you didn't like that it was Friday the 13th, right? Or something. You felt that things do happen on that day?
No.
You didn't say that?
No, I don't believe in bad luck.
Right. Okay, but we did talk about Friday the 13th, obviously,
we did,
right?
And where that came from. Looking,
right, exactly, right. The origins and everything.
Right.
But so it turned out that somebody noticed that the Paris attacks happened on Friday the 13th.
Absolutely.
Which, yeah, but I think it's irrelevant because a lot of things happened not on that date, and it's still bad. So it just depends on how you view things.
Absolutely, but yeah. Do we think that maybe they picked that day on purpose? Like, why did they pick this particular day?
I don't know, but I don't think for Muslims it's a significantly bad day, so I don't know. You know, I think.
Well, maybe then there's something to do with the 13th.
Maybe. Who knows? But a terrible thing happened in Paris, of course. If you've been under a rock, then you probably still know about it because it's everywhere. And now the big headline is that ISIS is threatening D.C. Now, this is nothing new. I mean, you know, they've been threatening us, but now they actually made good in Europe, and recall what we've been talking about here for months about ISIS and stuff. So they finally brought it to us, as we knew they would. Just it was a matter of time, and now the entire world has to deal with it.
Yep, it's very sad. I mean, horrific. There aren't words that I have it at my disposal to explain how I feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary, right? I mean, you think you're going to be there. You don't know where you're going to be when something like this hits.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what terrorism is for, is to scare people.
Yeah.
You know, into submission. But so I guess this morning they caught a guy or two in Belgium, one guy that they said was responsible. So I mean, I'm sure whoever stayed alive, they're going to find him eventually. But also France, I guess, were bombing them the other day, yesterday, bombed ISIS, so they didn't wait very long. And we'll see. I mean, this could become a world war, you know. I mean, when you have a few countries involved.
Yeah, well, France declared that this is war, you know, and I don't think they're wrong for doing it. And they said, we're not dealing with civilians, we're dealing with, like, animals.
Right.
So we're not going to treat them like a civilization when they're not acting civilized.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah, I know. And the thing is this, though, I mean, we've seen them do uncivilized things here for years now, and we didn't do anything, you know. And I guess it does take sometimes until it hits you at home to wake up to what's going on.
Well, France isn't our home.
No, but I'm talking about the West in general.
Ah.
Yeah, because this was contained in the Middle East until now, and, you know, with all the killings of their own people and other Muslims and Kurds and Yazidis and all these other people that were, that obviously not them. So if you're not them, you're against them, and that's what you get, you know. So, but we'll see in the days ahead what happens. You know, the main problem is you look at all these pictures of these innocent people and you go, my God, you know, they just went to a concert. They just went to a soccer game. And this is what happens, you know. So
it's scary. I mean, you know, my mom lives in Miami and I'm here. And so, like, between us, we, like, are now overly communicative about if we're going to go to somewhere where there's a lot of people.
Mm.
She was like, I'm going to go to the movies from this time to this time at this theater, just in case you want to know where I am.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's, you know what, fine. We could say that they've changed our lifestyle and that we're acting out of fear and we're, you know, having to adjust because of this terror. But I'd rather do this and be sure, like, and communicate with my relatives and friends and family and be cautious. Like, I don't want to go to the movie theater.
Yeah.
I personally don't like the movie theater anyway because of a lot of people.
Right.
And they're just, sometimes they talk and I don't like that. But, like, parking is also difficult. But the fact is that now it's, like, really unsafe.
Yeah.
I think about places all the time that I'm possibly at or that, like, are occurring in the country or the world. And I'm like, ooh. If I'm thinking that's a dangerous place to be, then the bad guy's definitely thinking that that's a good place to hit.
Yeah.
So it's scary.
That's true, yeah. But, you know, I mean, you also can't stop living your life either. You
no.
know? So
you just have to try and be as safe as possible.
But you tend to go to where there's people, right? In clubs, and not clubs, but bars, restaurants, things
yeah,
like
but,
that.
I mean, yeah. I don't know that anyone's, like, attacking the little bar that I'm at.
I hope not. But, I mean, they attack just a random restaurant and... Paris,
you know,
so you never know. But you can't stop living your life either, you know. So you just hope for the best and just be careful. Yeah, you know. But I mean, you know, when I go to the Israeli restaurant, I'm thinking, wow, what a target, you know. A lot of Jews in one concentration, that's perfect for them. But what are you going to do? Stop living, you know?
Right.
And having grown up
you
in
could order
that environment.
In.
Yeah, but having grown up in an environment like this where it was constantly dangerous, I learned to just live life, you know. I remember when I was young in the Six-Day War, I was 7 years old. No, I'm actually talking about the one in Yom Kippur in 73. I was 13 years old. I remember that we had to darken the whole city. Like, you know, cars couldn't have their lights on. Everybody had to turn off their lights because you didn't want to be seen from the air by the enemy. So, but I remember, I mean, we went to the movies during the war and everything, you know. It's just like you keep living.
Yeah.
Today, of course, things have changed quite a bit, you know. I mean, it's way beyond conventional wars. So it's not like that. But my point is that I grew up with this stuff and you just kind of learn to live your life. You can't stop it.
Right.
You know.
I mean, my thought was like, okay, if we go to war or whatever war looks like these days, how does that end?
Yeah.
Like, who decides, okay, that now it's over. It ended.
Well, when they're totally disarmed and decimated, I mean, when you feel that the leaders are gone, they don't have an infrastructure anymore, where they're unable to hit anymore. But that's the point, is that it doesn't take a lot of people to do this. You know, these terror acts. So you can destroy all of ISIS and still have a couple guys
right.
going to some country and blowing things up. So
I mean, and people are smarter these days. I mean, anyone can become the new leader.
Yeah.
You have the internet and you have, you know,
yeah.
history, like, to figure it out. I don't know that. It's just scary.
Yeah, I know. So I guess that's all we're going to be talking about for a long time. And because this affects our lifestyle and our quality of life, you know. And
I'm okay with it, just talking about it, because I mean, even this weekend I was like, everything I'm doing is trivial.
Right.
Like, why am I able to go eat at that restaurant?
Yeah.
There are people that are stuck inside and fearing for their lives in France.
Yeah.
Or that lost people over the weekend. And I'm just like, la da da, here's my muffin at the breakfast place.
Yeah. Well, you know. I just don't know what else to say. I had a friend that was there. I have on a trip a couple weeks ago, actually, she came back. And then a relative that lives in Paris. And they said, you know, there was a curfew. People couldn't leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, you know. So it's pretty scary.
I think it's really interesting that Facebook reenacted their safety feature that you can check, like, that you're safe.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. I saw two people that I knew put that they were safe. And I was like, what is this thing that they checked into that they're safe in Paris? And so I clicked into it. And I think it's interesting because that's a way to alert everybody.
Mm.
Like, let's say you're posting that you're, you know, on Instagram, I'm in Paris, look at me in front of the Eiffel Tower. And, like, everyone's watching your journey in Paris. And then all of a sudden this happens. How do you alert everyone at one time you're safe?
Yeah.
So you can check in on Facebook and it tells everyone this person is
safe.
That's
a good idea. Yeah, I saw a couple of those and I was wondering what's going on. So people actually had to check into that and post or something that they're okay.
I mean, right? You don't have to, but that's a feature now.
I mean, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we have a special guest in the studio, folks, and she's waiting here patiently. And we have Dr. Keisha Downey in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning.
Of course. Sorry to have started the morning with negative news, but we're going to pick it up right now. And because you're a psychotherapist.
Yes, yes.
And you know how to make people feel better.
I do.
Okay, so maybe you can make us all feel better now. What, I mean, do you get like people in your practice? Do you think you're going to get some people that are like affected by this stuff, by the news and everything? People getting scared affects their lives?
I think the younger population come in with a lot of questions, especially the ones that possibly could be bullied, because it's a form, you know, as you mentioned, terrorists, that's a form of you know, being bullied.
Right.
But I think a lot of this, or a lot of my clients right now, a lot of the teenagers and the young adults will have a lot of questions more so. Mm-hmm. But what I will say, because even though we're not in France or over there with them, the whole world is affected or impacted by this.
Right.
So that's why it's really important for mental health professionals such as myself and my colleagues to just be prepared and be available to assist individuals that are going through, you know, because they do have loved ones over there. Or even if they don't, just the impact of everything, like, wow, this could happen to me.
Exactly. You know? Especially for younger people, you know, who thinks everything revolves around them, you
know,
right?
Exactly.
Or there's all those people, like, you know, in the world that feel like, well, if this, like, how can this happen? How can there be a God? Like, why do I even want to be here if this kind of thing can go on?
Right, right. It actually hits home, too. You know, it reminds you, like, how close this is. You know, we're not talking about over in Iraq, like France.
Right.
How we go to France and we go on trips and have fun, and that's a tourist site.
Right.
So it just kind of, it makes you think about a lot of things. But I agree with you, Sam, what you were mentioning. We want to still live life,
right?
You know, because if we stop, then they're winning.
Right,
know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I can see how people would be shaken by all this stuff, you know. And, again, young kids, although it's in France, I mean, it's all over the news here. Mm-hmm. Everybody talks about it.
Right.
So I'm sure they're going to ask questions and find out,
mm-hmm.
could this happen here,
mm-hmm.
and all this stuff, you know. So, yeah, a lot of our security has been shaken, I think, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we need to somehow learn to live in a new world.
Exactly.
So
I agree.
To speak,
I definitely
know.
Agree.
So, Keisha, are you originally from L.A.?
I am not. I am from a city right outside of Chicago.
Uh-huh. What's it called?
It's called North Chicago.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, born and raised.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, today it's probably windier than it is in Chicago, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping when I get there it's going to be snow.
Really?
I know family and friends are like, no snow, but yeah.
Are you going home for the holidays?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, it is a holiday season. You need snow, you know?
I want snow. I want a lot of snow.
Really?
Now, whether if I'm going to get it, I don't know.
Yeah. But then O'Hare gets closed down with all the snow, and then you'll be stuck, you know?
That's okay, too.
Yeah, right?
More time with family.
Exactly. Stay there a little longer.
Yes.
Very cool. And how many years ago did you move here?
I have been here probably about 10 years, but on and off, between Chicago and here.
I see.
Yes.
Now, when you were there, is that where you you studied for your profession?
I did. I started there,
mm-hmm.
and I received my master's, my bachelor's and my master's there. And then I came out here, and I finished up my doctorate.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yes.
What, did you go to the University of Chicago? Or?
I did not. I went to the Alfred Adler School
uh-huh.
of Psychology. So you, Adlerian
Adler. Oh, I
see. Adler,
okay.
Yeah. I went to a specialty school to actually
uh-huh.
hone in on what Adlerian theory is.
Really?
So because I have a theoretical approach when I work with my clients.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, well, that begs the question, what is it?
Basically, Adlerian psychology is that we believe, you know, we are who we are because of our upbringings, and it's just you are what you are because of, how can I best put this? It's kind of like I have to do your whole lifestyle assessment, so I start from birth up into your current state or status.
Really?
And I learn everything about you in between, you know, from there to here.
Right.
So we believe in the entire individual, if that makes sense.
Okay.
And it just helps me to formulate what's going on in an individual's life. So it's kind of like, and I'll talk about this further, where I put on your lenses in order to see how you view the world,
right,
others, and yourself.
Right.
So that's the way, that's my approach when I walk in. So if you come in to see me, in order for me to fully understand you, I have to know what happened from birth up until.
Right. Because these are the things that affect us quite a bit when we're adults.
Yes.
Is that something, though, that's like draining to you? Like, because if you take on like their life and their issues and you really see it from their lens, is that something that like weighs on you?
Actually, it does not. And the only reason why I'm going to say that is because a lot of my classes at the particular school that I went to taught us, we were trained, like literally to know how to leave that stuff alone. And you also, you know what, you have to have the right mindset for this job too. Because I have had colleagues or even through college where there were certain things that were going on in a client's life and they just couldn't deal with it. So I think you just have to be... You have to have the right mindset for it, and I just do. I can deal with anyone, whether it's someone who has molested their own child, someone who has murdered someone. I just can deal with that, yeah.
Wow.
That's heavy stuff.
These are some things to deal with, let me tell you.
It is, and if you have someone who sits down in front of you who has, you know, mentioned that they have, you know, molested their child or what have you, you have to still provide a non-judgmental environment for that individual. If you cannot, then you have to refer out.
Yeah.
And so I just find it interesting. Like, I know that sounds odd, but I do.
Yeah.
And I really want to get inside of that individual's brain to see what was going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people end up repeating things that they have seen or witnessed or what's been done to them. And that's what I find a lot of times.
Yeah.
And they just didn't get the opportunity to correct or cope properly. So then they end up repeating what they
learned. What about people that are like not self-aware? So like, let's say, I mean, I know people that go to therapy and we're like, what have you been learning? Because you haven't changed at all. Mm-hmm. You still have the same issues. So we're wondering, like, is this person giving like the perspective they want to give? Are they telling like a story to their, you know, like, I guess therapist or whatever the person is that she goes to? But like, what if they, you know, edit what they're going through so that like, can you still see through, let's just say, see through the bullshit?
Yes. Yes, most times, yes. Mm. Actually, I'm going to say 99% times. But a therapist's job is to call you out on your BS. Mm. It's really, really important to do that.
Yeah.
And again, if you are assessing thoroughly, you know, like if you come in to see me and you tell me what's going on right now, I still have to know what happened 10, 20, 50 years ago in your life. And then I'm going to formulate, I'm going to get a good idea of what's been going on. But you know, if someone comes in and they're trying to BS you or trying to pull you along and not telling the truth, most therapists should be able to see through that. And if someone is coming to you and you're like, hey, you haven't changed, then maybe they're not as forthcoming. Maybe the therapist and that person didn't have a good therapeutic relationship. There's a breakdown somewhere.
Right, so, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, sometimes you see people going to therapy for years and there's no change, like you said.
Yeah.
You know? But even if there's no change, maybe there is something inside of them going on. I can't imagine people coming to you for so many times and not being affected by this somehow. You know,
what I've found, a lot of clients go into therapy to vent.
Mm.
And they don't want help.
Yeah.
They just want
someone to listen.
To listen to them.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's an expensive friend.
Yeah. But there's people need that sometimes because, again, therapists are not supposed to judge. So if you can go into some place and you can explain and give everything and someone is there to listen and nod or what have you and validate.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why we get people who don't, or clients or individuals who come out and you don't see any differences. But that does happen.
Yeah.
Where, because usually, or at least with me, we have goals. And I cater the therapy to that individual because everybody's wired differently. So
right.
If I have one goal or one way I'm going to do something, I can't do it with this individual over here either. Because everybody's, you know, wired differently.
Yeah.
So that could happen where someone just goes and they're just venting. It happens.
Yeah, huh?
She still comes out a victim every time.
And personality types, too, has a lot to do with it, too.
Yeah.
So, but I can imagine, so based on what Jen says, is that sometimes you can work with someone for a long time and there's not much change because they don't want to change, yeah. right? I mean, a person has to change. I mean, a person can only change if they want to.
Right.
Right? Nobody can change another person.
Exactly.
It's something that some people are stubborn with,
yeah.
or maybe some people, it's really hard for them to change.
They're stuck.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they're stuck. Mm-hmm. We're talking to Dr. Keisha Downey. You can go to her website, drkeishadowney.com. Check out more information. I see that you deal with... all members of the family, teenagers and adults and couples and things like that.
Yes, yes.
So I just wanted to ask, so you moved from Chicago to here mm-hmm. and you decided to open your practice here?
Yes.
Why did you move from L.A. To L.A. from Chicago?
Well, to make a long story short, when I was a little girl, some odd years ago, I used to come out here every summer and spend time with my grandmother. And I always liked the wonderful weather. So I just always said once I graduated with my first degree, or at least had, I always felt it was really expensive to live out here compared to where I grew up. And I moved out here after I graduated, and I have my children, and we started a new life out here.
Wow, very nice.
3,000 miles away from everything that I know.
Yeah, huh? But at least you'd been here before, so you know what you were moving to.
Yes, yes, definitely. I love the summers out here with my grandmother.
Yeah,
yeah.
Very nice. So, okay, so going back to what you do, is there like an area of focus for you that you're stronger in than others, or is it pretty much like... you're open to whatever comes.
I'm open to whatever comes. So
right.
My specialties, of course, include working with couples, families, teenagers, and adults. And they come in with an array of different issues from domestic violence, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, parent issues, you know, parents who don't really feel that they're parenting their children the right way, anger management. I mean, it just depends. I mean, I deal with borderline schizophrenia patients that have to be referred to psychiatrists. It just depends.
Right.
So I don't turn people away, but if it's something that is out of my scope, then of course I will refer.
Yeah.
So like if someone comes in for an eating disorder, I do have experience working with kids or people who have eating disorders, but I may refer out because it's not my specialty.
Right. So you
sense.
Send them to a specialist or something.
Yes, exactly.
To deal
or
with
someone
this.
Who or another psychotherapist who specializes with eating
right.
disorders.
Yeah. Right.
But it just depends. But I geared my education towards marriage and family therapy because growing up I saw a lot of dysfunction within families and a lot of relationship issues between couples. So I honed in on that the marital, you know, I specified or my specialty was in marriage and family therapy just so I can be able to help, you know, those individuals.
Yeah, obviously you always want to focus on something, you know, because, you know, otherwise you just like, so you spread yourself too thin and you're not strong in anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are some, I mean, so you mentioned like domestic violence and stuff. What do you find is maybe the most common problem that couples have?
Communication and trust.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So how do people lose trust with cheating, things like that, right? Or
is it from what they saw as children?
Actually, it's both. But I also feel like a lot of individuals go into relationships and they have not dealt with their past baggage. Mm-hmm. So they bring it into the relationship.
I see. Okay.
So if I'm dating a guy and I was cheated on or he was cheated on or what have you, and he hasn't worked through those issues, he may come into the relationship with me and I'm straight and narrow, just not doing anything. But because of his insecurities and whatever happened previously, he'll start to dump that stuff into the relationship. And
yeah.
It's already messed up.
And he'll be insecure and suspicious and all this stuff,
yep.
accusing you of things and
exactly.
jealous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did I was a part of a study on what causes marital discord in 2005. And communication was the number one issue. Communication and trust. There were believe it or not, personal habits that arise that can cause marital discord, intimacy issues, religion, parenting, things of that nature, but communication and trust were the number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I imagine like intimacy sort of like leaves the relationship when there's problems.
Right.
Right? Right. When there's problems. Now, do you find that people lose intimacy just because? I mean, or is it always rooted at something else?
I believe it's rooted at something else.
Yeah.
Especially if the intimacy was there initially, then and then it just happened to go away or stop, then something else happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether someone has stepped outside of the relationship, whether resentment has kicked in at some point and the person doesn't like their spouse or what have you. But I feel there's something else going on.
Yeah.
Have people been able to get it back?
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, yeah. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes when there's bad blood, you know, you just don't want to like deal with it anymore.
Well, it's also about reconnecting because there can be a huge disconnect within relationships, and communication plays a huge factor. So sometimes in therapy, we would I'd ask the couples to not even be intimate with one another. Like, let's reconnect. Let's work on the communication. Let's work on maybe touch, but no sex or anything like that. Or let's build that foundation again and build the friendship. And then it causes we start to form the connection back. And then the intimate, mm-hmm. like you want your partner more,
right.
Or you yearn for your partner, or, you know, things of that nature. So there's a method to the madness.
Yeah, I guess there is, you know.
What is the difference between a psychotherapist and like a psychologist?
Licensure.
Yeah.
Pretty much licensure, yeah. Because, I actually am a psychologist. I'm just not licensed as a psychologist. I chose to be licensed as a marriage and family therapist.
Yeah.
So,
very interesting, yeah. Now, but you work closely with psychiatrists too, right?
I mean,
because you have to, because sometimes you recognize mental illness or something like that. Right?
Yes, yes. Medication is out of our scope of practice. And so when someone comes in and they're depressed, or they're dealing with anxiety or anything that, you know, would possibly lead to someone needing some type of medication, then we refer to a psychiatrist.
Right.
I do believe in trying to exhaust everything organically first. And that's just my own preference because medication has lots of different side effects, especially
exactly.
with the younger kids. But if you feel or you see someone that's just really, really at their lowest point, or if you have a child that's just bouncing off of the walls and you know they have ADHD and there's nothing that I can do to assist, then I will refer to a psychiatrist.
All
and then we work hand in hand, the psychiatrist and then myself.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, you have to. And so you develop a certain program for the patient.
Yes.
And you deal with that. And kids obviously have problems too.
Yes.
Right? What are some of the more common problems that kids have? Like, let's say preteens.
Preteens, what I am finding, a lot of kids are being bullied.
Really?
Or they're bullying.
Right. But that's always happened, right? It's just that now more people are talking about it.
More people are talking about it, but what happens if you're being bullied, then it causes a child to be depressed or causes them to suffer from some type of anxiety.
Right.
And then if you are the bully, you're the person doing the bullying, a lot of times there's things going on in the home or they've been picked on. There's always there's always something going on to trigger or cause these individuals to do that. But a lot of times what I'm finding are kids are coming in angry,
really?
Not getting along with their parents or something of the such. So anger is kind of like the root behind it. Or,
right.
you know, if someone's getting bullied, you know, causes them to be depressed. But typically that. I also work with foster care and juvenile youth. So, and a lot of I have a lot of gang-affiliated clients as well.
Mm.
So the issues there have a lot to do with the environment that the kids are put into. And so, you know, when you walk out of your door and you have to worry about being in a gang or what have you, or someone's going to, you know, come at you, that's an issue too.
Right.
Yeah.
That's pretty traumatic,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah. Or being taken away from your mother or your father, that's traumatic.
Yeah.
So that is huge. So I deal with that a lot, too. Just trying to help a child feel comfortable and stable, moving into a foster home, hoping and praying that the foster home is best suited for the kid, because foster parents do sometimes bad things as well. So we have to be there. I try to be there for all of my clients as best as I can and just prepare them for reunification with their families And then we work with the families. So by the time the child is placed back with their parents, the family is ready, you know, as well. So it's right. a huge process. But
yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot going on, you know. So Dr. Keisha Downey, you guys can check out more on her website, drkeishadowney.com. And a psychotherapist from Chicago who is here in L.A. now.
Yes.
The problem with children, I mean, obviously they see a lot of abuse, or not everybody, or maybe not even a lot of abuse, but some kids experience abuse at home, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, but many of them, because of their young age, they don't realize they're being abused, right?
Right.
So I guess that could be sort of like suppressed and then, or, you know, repressed and come back later at a later age.
Yeah. So what I find with that is you're absolutely right. They kind of keep it intact and keep it in place, and two things could happen. It'll either come out where they're the abuser, or either they fight really hard so that they don't become the abuser.
Yeah.
So, you know, I even have friends, you know, so my personal experiences just with friends or what have you that may have been abused as a child, but because they were abused, like, they will not touch their child at all because they know what they were put through.
Yeah, so it's like the other extreme.
Exactly, exactly. But then you do have situations where people are abused, whether it's sexually, physically, or what have you, or they witness their mother or father getting hit, and they repeat those same patterns. So I've seen both ends of it,
yeah.
And with my clients as well.
Yeah, so. And they're both hurting, both sides.
Both are hurting, yeah. And what ends up happening with that child, even when they become an adult, you know, you have self-esteem issues, you know, they're traumatized or there's traumatic experiences, and it just...
Yeah.
That's why I'm here and my colleagues are here to help people.
Yeah. You see, that's the thing. Sometimes people don't realize they're being abused. Like, when I look back, my dad used to give us the silent treatment. And, you know, I mean, with my mom, you know, I mean, I don't want to air out the dirty laundry and stuff, but let's just say that he gave a silent treatment to all of us at a certain point when he was just angry or not agreeing with us or mm-hmm. something. But it's not a day or two. I mean, it could be months. Mm. And when you look back, you realize I was totally being ignored, you know, like mm-hmm. I didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how resilient kids are, you know, to protect and defend themselves. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it stays there,
yeah.
You know. And I mean, I don't feel I was traumatized by it. I remember it was a terrible place to be. But I think my mom was.
Right.
You know. I mean, so people have to understand that abuse doesn't only happen physically, you know, and I mean, emotionally, it can be just as tough.
Yes, yes. It can affect your mental, you know,
yeah.
and you carry it with you.
Right.
You know, and again, it affects your self-esteem. It
yeah.
really can. If you're not told that you're loved often enough when you're a child, or if you're not touched or nurtured growing up, you know, that's not, of course, considered physical abuse, but it has something to do with you emotionally. So
yeah.
when you get into a relationship or when you have kids, you might not be affectionate or know how to say I love you to someone else. So all of
yeah.
those things play a role, I believe, in, you know, when you become an adult or you transition from a child to an adult.
Right. And that's the thing. You know, I mean, I remember I went to a workshop once in Israel like 20 years ago or something, and there was this woman there. I mean, and the guy had like a totally revolutionary thing. I mean, I found myself on the floor fighting to breathe because of the methods they were using and stuff, right? I mean, his assistant like pinned me down to the ground because they said you're out of turn and all this stuff. So people had to fight for their therapy there.
Mm.
So the reason I'm bringing it up is because he walked to this older lady and slapped her. And everybody was like in shock. And he says, you see, he says, your husband is smart. He never did this to you. You know, he only abused you emotionally, because if he had abused you physically, you would have known you were being abused and he probably would have walked out.
Wow.
You know? So, I mean, that's pretty powerful. But the thing is, I think it goes to show that abuse can happen in many different ways. Mm-hmm. And many people don't even realize they're being abused.
Right.
Yeah. That's why I guess sometimes people ask, why is she staying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is she staying when she's being abused? Well, so I guess I would imagine one reason is that she doesn't know she's being abused. What are some of the other reasons they'll stay?
The children.
The children.
Shame.
Yeah.
Finances.
Yeah.
You know, those are some of the main reasons, especially if you're in a, you know, marital, you know, in a marriage and there's children involved, and you know, they make excuses also for the husband or the wife.
I mean,
because it goes both ways now.
Yeah,
when
they're
abusing men.
So it
happens. But finances, they don't have the finances or the means to leave their spouse.
Right.
The children, you know, I want to keep things together for my family. Shame, not wanting people to know about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I know. There's a lot of shame and that stays in the family,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And people, you know, don't realize what kind of environments the people come from.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, we got to count our blessings, you know, that we... when we have a loving family and understanding. But yeah, everybody's got problems, you know, because I think mainly it's because a family is not something you choose, you know.
Right.
You're born into, so you have to deal with
right,
it,
right,
you know.
Right, right, right. And then we're here to help.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes, yes.
Very good. So how do people find you when you're not on the radio? I mean, how do... because you work with a lot of different people,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
different social classes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
How are you usually referred to?
Through doctor's offices and, you know, my website, referral. It just depends.
Yeah.
You know, I network a lot, but my private practice is, you know, where I want it to be. So it's just...
great.
You know, doctor, yeah, we'll call.
So this is, I mean, but obviously this is basically based on referrals, right?
Yeah.
Nobody
oh, yeah.
wants to just pick anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So they go based on what
yeah,
somebody
well, I'm
tells
on a couple
you.
Of websites as well. Where they, you know, I can be found if, because a lot of people are like looking in a specific area, you know, a specific culture, woman, man, or what have you. So I'm on those websites.
Mm.
So for instance, Beverly Hills, or what, if people are looking in that area, and they're if they're looking for African American therapist or Caucasian, that's kind of how people narrow it down that way
right.
too. So these websites are set up for myself and my colleagues.
Oh, nice!
And you know, they can find us.
Yeah.
What are the websites?
Psychology Today. And then I'm also on AfricanAmericanTherapist.com.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
And I see here in the notes you are also on TV, right?
I
VH1?
Am.
Tell us, oh, you still are?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, I don't watch TV, so I don't know what's on. But
you
tell
don't
us
watch
a little
TV,
bit.
No,
tell us a little bit about that. I'll start watching now that I know you're on TV.
Well, I'll tell you, for those of you who don't know about VH1's Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen, we're in our sixth season, which is airing now every Wednesday from 10/9 Central.
Uh-huh.
And I have been on four of the six seasons.
Really?
And it is a awesome show about couples, celebrity couples, and they come on, and Dr. Jen and her counselors, I'm one of the counselors on the show, she does her magic. And
really?
She assists these couples, and they come in with real problems, and, you know, and she does a great job.
That's interesting,
yeah.
You know, because I've read somewhere that many people that went into reality shows ended up breaking up, you know. And so this is interesting that couples would come on the show and you can actually fix them up,
yeah.
You know.
I mean, it's a really, really good show because we are licensed professionals. And Dr. Jen, there's couples that come onto the show with a set of problems, like I mentioned. And they're there. It's really intense therapy. And you do the
and
work.
And it's all on camera.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, wow. Not everything is
right.
on camera, but I mean the things that, you know, are shown. And I don't even really
right.
know
the
what comes onto the
right.
show, yeah. But, yeah, and like I said, I'm one of the counselors, and I assist Dr. Jen. I'm a part of her treatment team, and it's an amazing show.
How did you end up on the show?
Well, a couple of years ago, I had a mentor slash supervisor, and she told me that they were hiring for a counselor. And I went and interviewed. I had two interviews, and I got hired on to be a part of Dr. Jen's treatment team.
Very good.
And it's 4 seasons later.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you're a natural for it. Yeah. Then. There you go.
Yeah. It's awesome. Really good group. You guys got to check it out, though.
Yeah. So the show is called what? A VH1 Couples Therapy?
With Dr. Jen, yes.
With Dr. Jen. And, that's a Wednesday at 10 o'clock. 9 Central on VH1, and I don't know, I didn't realize VH1 still exists.
Oh,
actually,
because
there's
so
no music,
yeah.
You know.
Oh, wow, yeah, those days, yeah, I remember those days.
so they focus mostly what on reality shows and things like that,
yes.
Yeah. So MTV is the same, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So no big difference between them anymore.
Right.
They used to have
just demographic. Like MTV's younger.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. And maybe because the music was different at the time, you know, but now I mean I can't see now why the audiences would be different. Do you? I mean, how's VH1 different from MTV right now?
Programming.
Yeah.
Yeah, they reach different age groups.
Okay. Like but they both do reality shows?
Yeah.
So it's a different groups. Okay.
Right.
All right, I'll buy that.
And you'll watch Couples Therapy.
Yeah, I'll have to. So this is the 6th season already of the show?
Yeah,
and you've been on 4 of them, you said?
4 of them, yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
When did you start? When was your first time on?
2013, I believe.
Oh, really? Okay, so a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. And so for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Dr. Keisha Downey, a marriage and family psychotherapist. You're based where? In Beverly Hills?
Beverly Hills, yes.
Okay. And so I guess now if somebody's not in L.A., do you provide therapy like over the phone, Skype, things like that? I know sometimes people do.
I try to stay away from that.
Yeah.
I will do that for clients that I have already if they can't get to me or what have you, but I prefer for my clients to come into my office or I travel to them.
Right, yeah. You gotta have that face-to-face.
Yeah, face-to-face is always good. But again, under certain circumstances, you know, if you have to talk over the phone or Skype, but there's so many parameters that we have to stay in.
Right.
Being licensed by the state of California, we have to follow the rules. So,
yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. Now, how about teens? What are some of the problems with teens? Are they also experiencing bullying, or is that more like in the romantic area?
You know, I find with the teens, believe it or not, eating disorders, cutting is becoming common now. There's a lot of cutters or superficial cutters.
Wow. What's a superficial cutter?
People who kind of cut a little bit, but they're not really.
They're not into
more for
it.
Like the cry for help.
Yeah, or just for show. Just for show. They don't really know what they're doing. And when a true cutter, like they're literally cutting, not to kill themselves or what have you, but it's more to release or to take some type of control over whatever their situation is.
Yeah.
But I find that that's common now. And,
So are they copying each other? Is that why it's common?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And relationship issues, a lot of anger. And again, a lot of this stuff stems from dysfunction within families, unfortunately. Yeah.
See, I think that's really the meaning of life is coming in here as an innocent baby, getting all screwed up by your parents, and then you have to deal with it for the rest of your life, you know? How do you overcome that? That becomes your lesson. You know?
Come to us. You come to me and my colleagues.
Exactly. Very cool. So now as the holidays are coming, you probably see a lot of clients probably suffering from depression, things like this, holiday blues. What are some of the things that people can do? I mean, let's say somebody, usually I think the problem is with someone maybe who's living away from home, you know, they don't have anybody for the holidays and stuff. What do you tell them?
It's really tricky. For some, though, I probably would just suggest if you do have a loved one that's just not with you, just joining in with them. So if there's Skype or if there's a phone or what have you, just including them through the holidays still, even though if they're afar. That's really what you can do. That's the most you can do.
Just
try to
connect with someone.
Yeah, trying to connect or sending them cards or letters or what have you and trying to keep them, you know, involved.
Right.
You do have people who are incarcerated, so That's a little different as well. You know, if you, a lot of people go visit, you know, on the holidays to their loved ones and things of that nature. But it's really just about keeping them involved or joining in with them or connecting with them. And then for those who have lost, you know, loved ones to death or what have you, that one is it's a little bit more challenging to some. Just reflecting on the good memories and the times that were shared. And just keeping, you know, them close to your heart, you know, and just celebrating, you know, life if you can. Some people can't, but a part of grieving is acceptance.
Plus you can go shopping. You can always go shopping, right?
Yeah.
Does make you feel a little better.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, that's very, you know, I mean, it's all like fascinating to me. I mean, you learn a lot about this, and Jen asked you, you know, if it doesn't affect you and all that stuff, how do you re-energize yourself from all this? I mean, you're sitting there, one patient after another, you're hearing all these depressing stories and stuff. How do you recharge yourself?
You know, every client is not depressed. So for instance, I may have three clients earlier in the day that are depressed.
Right.
But then my other three clients bring me satisfaction that I did my job because they they did something that they couldn't do 5 years ago or what have you. And so that balances it out.
Right. So that then you see the results.
Like, the results is what re-energizes me. Like, yes, like I'm doing something good or what have you. But also just self-care for myself.
Yeah.
You know, self-care is really important. I'm doing more of it now.
Right.
And just really just balancing things out because I feel like I work a lot.
Right.
And so I have to remember to play a lot as well, too. So
There you go, you know. And that's the thing because I always wonder about psychologists. I mean, it's like the patient will suck the energy out of you, mm-hmm. you know, because there's so much negativity and stuff. Not because they want to be, but that's why they come to you in the first place.
Right, right, right.
There's a lot of darkness in their life, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And it's really important, too, in the beginning stages of therapy to set boundaries and really, really lay out the expectations of therapy. So a lot of clients will overstep boundaries and call you 100 million times and become dependent on you because you're giving them something that they hadn't gotten before.
Right.
But if you set those appropriate boundaries in the beginning and make sure you implement them all the way through, then it helps also. Because, again, if I had clients that called me every single day or I didn't set those boundaries, I probably would be a little. But, you know, I just really have learned with practice, my training and just personal experiences to really set boundaries with my clients and then just work on myself.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, do you often find people having problem with, like, they're depressed because they have problem with, like, dating and things like that, not being able to communicate with the other sex, things like that?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. It all reflects or stems from just not knowing how to express yourself. Mm-hmm. And, again, that may have something to do with just, you know, your self-esteem.
Right.
You know, being shy or an introvert and not really knowing how to express really what you want to say to that person. So then you end up suffering inside or, you know, so you, I get clients who come in and just don't know how to be proactive in that area.
Right.
So, you know, from an Adlerian perspective, there's three aspects of life that we focus on: intimacy, work or education, and then your social life. So when any of those areas are affected or impacted, you know, I try to help to reframe or recreate those areas, you know, and that's really, if you think about it, that's really what's in our lives,
right.
Your social life, work or education, and then your intimacy or your love life.
Right.
And so that's my job to kind of recreate, not fix. I'm not a fixer, but to recreate those areas.
Yeah. Very impressive.
Yeah.
So now, what are the plans for the future? I mean, you obviously have a website that people can find you and stuff. Do you have any plans for the future for yourself? I mean, are you going to, like, have your own TV show, things like that?
That would be great, no.
Yeah. Is that in the cards for you?
No, actually, I am working on a book.
Uh-huh.
Hope to be released in 2016. And just continuing to educate people on mental health, especially in my community where I was raised, because a lot of people are not into mental health or going to receive therapy services. So really just educating the masses, I think, is so important, especially now with everything that's going on in the world, to know what is available.
Do you think there will ever be a time where there isn't a stigma, like, toward mental health?
No.
There's always going to be, right?
I think there's always going to be.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be individuals who will tell somebody not to, that they'll tell somebody not to, and they'll tell somebody not to, and it'll just carry on. Yeah.
And people look at it as like character defects rather than an illness or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So your childhood, did you have a difficult childhood?
No, I grew up in a single parent household. And my mother did the best that she can do. But I lived between two households, my mother and my grandmother. And, I just wanted something different, though.
Yeah.
I do have children. I have a 20-year-old and a 16, she'll be 17-year-old. So I just really, really wanted a different experience for them. So hence, that's why I'm in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
So I did everything in my power to, you know, do everything the right way, go to college right after high school. You know, and in between, of course, having children, you kind of take some time off, and then just kept going until I can be able to give them everything that they need. So, and hopefully they'll take care of me later.
Yeah. Hopefully. Isn't that why you bring kids?
They better.
Yeah. But now that we're helping my aging parents, I realize how important it is to have children.
Yeah.
It really is, you know. Now, obviously, not exclusively so they'll take care of you.
Right.
But, you know, it helps.
Yes.
It helps because otherwise you're in the hands of strangers and that's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Keisha Downey, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. You guys are awesome for having me.
Are you like on social networks and things like that? I mean, do you want people to find you there or just on your website?
You can go to my website and all my social outlets are there. Social network. I'm so sorry. I'm tongue-tied right now. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. They're all on my website.
Right.
Yes.
So just go to Dr. Keisha Downey. That's Dr. D-R. Dr. Keisha Downey .com. You can go to VH1 Wednesdays at 10 p.m., I imagine, right?
10, 9 Central, yes.
Yeah. On VH1, you can catch Couples Therapy with Dr. Jen. And, of course, Dr. Keisha is there, too.
Yay!
So there you go. Are you on every episode or occasionally?
So far, I have been, but it just depends. We never know what they're going to show. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I'm assisting and doing what I do.
Well, much success to you. You're very interesting, very entertaining, and we appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much. Thank you guys for having me. I love it.
Of course. And if somebody needs any help, Dr. Keisha is the answer.
Yes.
So there you go. She knows what she's talking about. And you call it Adlerian?
Adlerian. Alfred Adler. Psychologists know who they are.
Yeah.
Who he is.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks.
And we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Thank you.
Here on LA Talk Radio.